a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Zhu Yifeng. Coming up in the program. China's first ever large passenger aircraft, the C919, starts regular commercial operations on the Shanghai to Chengdu route. U.S. President Joe Biden, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy have reached a tentative deal to raise the country's debt ceiling. And in our special series, Biz Focus, we explore the changes in Dafeng, the world's largest oil painting village near Shenzhen. We start our program with big news from China's aviation sector. The country's first ever large passenger aircraft, the C919, landed with 135 passengers on board at Chengdu Tianfu Airport on Monday in its inaugural regular commercial operation on the Shanghai Hongqiao to Chengdu Tianfu route of China Eastern Airlines. With additional deliveries planned, the C919 plane is expected to serve more destinations. The aircraft accomplished its first commercial flight on Sunday, carrying China Eastern Airlines passengers from Shanghai Hongqiao International Airport to Beijing Capital International Airport, landing 2 hours later. Here's a quick look at some of the plane's background and specifications.
The C919 was developed by the state-owned Commercial Aviation Corporation of China, or COMAC. The single-aisle twin-engine aircraft has 164 seats divided into business and economy classes. It has a range of up to 5,555 kilometers. COMAC said in January it had received more than 1,200 orders from over 30 clients. The Chinese government formed the corporation in 2008 to design and build the C919. It aims to become a major player in the large airliner manufacturing market. The C919 had its maiden test flight in 2017. It completed its official certification in September last year. In December, the first plane was delivered to China Eastern Airlines for 100 hours of test flights to verify safety. COMAC plans to build up to 150 planes a year in the next 5 years. Chen Chenchen, CGTN.
The commercial launch of China's C919 jetliner signifies a turning point in the country's trillion-dollar aircraft industry. As the end of 2022, the C919 has garnered over 1,000 orders from 32 clients. According to the Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, the global market is expected to see over 41,000 new airplanes worth about $6.1 trillion between 2021 and 2040. China alone is expected to acquire over 9,900 airliners worth roughly $1.4 trillion. That's 22% of the total worldwide, making it the biggest aviation market on the planet by then. Join us now for more discussion on the maiden commercial flight of China's first self-developed passenger jet and its implications for the world aviation industry is Liu Zhiqing, Senior Fellow of the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies at Renmin University of China. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Liu. Could you please share your insights on the some people's contentions that some key parts of the C919 planes are imported?
I think this question is quite interesting because they do not understand the whole story of the new technology development. In fact, in many countries, especially in the United States, in Boeing or in Germany, the Airbus, they had also a similar problem that at the very beginning that they have some key parts imported from other countries, from other suppliers. Because at the very beginning, no country or nobody can rely on its own technology field or efforts. So in this way that China has a very practical knowledge together with all these other supply chains that in order to get the best results. So in this way, we see that some key parts imported from other countries. This is the first step. And the second step that we can rely on this from this products we have already learned from other countries. This is a very normal practice for all, including the Airbus or the also Boeing airspace. Because I still remember our first visit to airspace and also the Airbus and the Boeing in early 1980s that our minister visited this there. So we saw that the same production line also had cooperations with other suppliers. So I think this is a very normal. There's no question that China will develop its own key parts from our practice.
Right. There are also concerns, especially from Western media, that about China's ability to scale up the production of C919 aircraft. It's true that the aircraft has received over 1,000 orders, but how many can we make a year? What is your perspective on this issue?
I should understand this in another way, because it's very logical that China would develop our own aircraft from very beginning, from the small quantity to bigger quantity. This is a very logical and necessary step for all countries to follow, especially for China. Such a larger manufacturer capacity, there's no doubt we can produce all kinds of different parts, and also the supply chains and in China is very unique and with high efficiency. So by doing so, I think China's capacity has no question. The only question is that whether the global market have enough forces or enough strength that to attract Chinese suppliers. So because when China's capacity is coming up, that we can meet all demands from all of the partners in the world. So yeah. In China, we have our own smart technology, our very strong manufacturing capacity. We can do everything that in a short time. This is already tested by many events.
Right, so China has definitely shown its manufacturing prowess throughout the years. Now, with China's move to develop its own planes and challenge the monopoly that Boeing and Airbus currently hold in the world, how significant is this development for the global aviation industry, and what are the potential implications?
As we know that to manufacture the aircraft by our own is also one important part of China's dream. It's also very important of China's modernization. We cannot imagine that China's modernization cannot or have no capacity that to produce our own wide-body passenger aircraft. So this question is very logical to say that China will have its dream realized by our efforts together with the global corporations. As we know, as we already discussed, even in Boeing or Airbus, they have also some products produced in China, supplied by Chinese manufacturers. So this is really a very globalization practice for all parts. It's a benefit to all partners who join us. So the other thing that I should say that our aircraft is not too breaking the monopoly of other suppliers. No, this is a very narrow-minded. Actually, 1.4 billion people will need our own aircraft. This is a very logical, like something like railway, like shipbuilding, also like even food security. We should mainly rely on ourselves. We can expect that if in the future some unexpected incident happened, for instance, unexpected war broken in America or in Europe, all this supply chain could be disrupted suddenly. So that's another good reason for us to have our own aircraft manufacturer. Of course, we should say the global commercial market for aircraft is, the cake is too big. China should have its own contribution to the market, to develop it, to strengthen it, and also to benefit for all.
Thank you very much for sharing your interesting insights. That's Liu Zhiqing for us from Renmin University of China. U.S. President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy have reached a tentative deal to raise the country's debt ceiling. They will vote what's seen by both sides as a catastrophic default, over the Faircloth reports from Washington, D.C.
A fair amount of midnight oil has been burned over the weekend, and it took a 90-minute phone call between U.S. President Joe Biden and the most senior Republican in U.S. Congress, Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House. But finally, Republicans and Democrats, after days and weeks of negotiations, have finally managed to resolve their differences and stave off an imminent threat to the United States, the potential default on $31.4 trillion of debt on or around June the 5th. These two sides have managed to reconcile their differences to suspend US borrowing limits, known as the debt ceiling, until January 2025. That means the US can effectively keep paying its bills and the government can function. Inevitably, it costs both sides compromises. US President Joe Biden hailing this compromise as the breakthrough. So both sides have had to compromise. For example, Republicans giving up the idea that they can stop Joe Biden introducing debt forgiveness for students, a cornerstone of his administration. But for Democrats as well, they'll have to accept that some food stamp eligibility will be contingent on employment status, something they previously described as cruel and a non-starter. The crucial question now, though, is can this deal pass through Congress? Many lawmakers are out of Washington, D.C. for an extended holiday weekend. That means a vote on this won't be held until Wednesday. And McCarthy has enraged some of the most fiscally conservative members of the Republican Party. One congressman, Ralph Norman, tweeting, "This deal is insanity. A $4 trillion debt ceiling increase with virtually no cuts is not what we agreed to." This congressman saying simply, he will not vote for it. There are reports that as many as 60 Republicans will revolt over this. That means Republicans will have to enlist Democrats to help pass it.
I think this agreement frames all that from limit, save, grow. It doesn't get everything everybody wanted, but that's in divided government. That's where we end up. I think it's a very positive bill.
But perhaps for Kevin McCarthy, the ultimate cost could be his position as Speaker. In order to get that job, he made a concession that allowed members of his party, a single member of his party, to effectively call for his removal. And that's something that's going to be weighing on the minds of these Republican lawmakers, particularly these hardline conservatives, as they ponder whether to pass this legislation. Owen Fairclough, CGTN, Washington.
Now, for more discussions on the U.S. debt ceiling and some recent downgrade of U.S. debt ratings by both Chinese and international rating agencies, we're joined in the studio by Christine Zhang, the Executive Director of Sovereign and Overseas Business at China Chengxin International Credit Rating. Well, Christine, thank you for joining us. We know that your rating agency is one of the biggest in China and the only Chinese. Mm-hmm. It has been the only Chinese rating agency to downgrade U.S. debt. What are the reasons behind your move?
I think the downgrade mainly reflects our view that the intensification of political divisions between the two parties has increased the difficulty of resolving the debt ceiling issue. So even if there's agreement reached at the last minute, in the absence of substantive reform measures, we do believe the debt ceiling issue would recur.
We haven't talked about any reforms yet.
Yes, yes. And that would negatively affect the policy paths of the government, dampen the economic prospects, and at the same time, it will lead to even higher government debt level and declining
debt
affordability.
About $4 trillion now.
Yes, yes, it will be even higher. Right. In that way, we don't think this mode cannot be sustained if the credit base of U.S. debt and the U.S. dollar will be eroded.
Earlier, we found out that Fitch has put the U.S. debt in the negative watch list.
Yes.
S&P has downgraded.
Yeah.
And China Chengxin has also downgraded.
Yeah.
What's the significance of a Chinese rating agency downgrading U.S. sovereign debt?
Yes, actually, we are not the first rating agency to downgrade the sovereign rating of U.S. Back in 2011, the S&P have downgraded the sovereign rating of U.S. from AAA to AA+, and that has actually caused a huge significance on the financial markets. But you know, S&P, they insisted their opinion and they kept their AA+ rating up until now. So for CCXI, you know, we would like the market to know not only the big three international rating agencies are assigning sovereign ratings. For example, China Chengxin, we have deeply engaged the local rating business for over 31 years, and we have been disclosing our sovereign rating for more than 10 years. So with the internationalization of RMB and opening up of Chinese capital markets, actually the local Chinese credit rating agencies are also trying to expand our global footprint and have our own voice as a Chinese rating agency.
Right. Yeah. Now, there's a tentative agreement between U.S. President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Well, the deal has to be discussed in the U.S. Congress. What if they reach a deal and raise the debt ceiling? Would that change your outlook?
Yes, currently the debt ceiling is likely to be raised in exchange for a cap of non-military expense for 2 years. So in that scenario, we don't think that a default will be avoided, and the general impact on global financial markets would be limited. However, attention should be paid to the liquidity pressure due to the reissuance of government debt, which is not a small scale, and that will, you know, have negative impact on the banking sector, which is already in liquidity pressure. And also, you know, cutting expense at a large scale would have a negative impact on the policy path and the monetary path. And it is also not supportive of economic growth. Mm-hmm. It may even disturb the 2024 election results. So in that way, we do believe that the debt ceiling issue will recur in 2025, probably. And
every 1 or 2 years.
Yes, yes. So the continuous hate on the debt ceiling issue will damage the credit base of U.S. debt and the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
And, yes.
And without significant reform, the U.S. way of always
yes.
outspending its budget
yes.
cannot be sustainable. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Christine
Zhang. Thank you.
From China Chengxin Ratings, one of the biggest rating agencies in China, which has just downgraded the U.S. sovereign debt. Time now for our special series, Biz Focus, where our anchors and reporters take a closer and deeper look at some of the most dynamic business sectors in China. We'll be speaking with a range of experts to bring you the insights regarding the latest developments and trends shaping the world's second largest economy. In this edition, we explore China's biggest oil painting village in Shenzhen.
Biz Focus, feeling China's economic pulse. I'm Huang Fei in Shenzhen. We're live in the southern village of Dafen, once known as the global art factory, producing an estimated 60% of the world's new oil paintings. But that was 30 years ago. The shops that once churned out copies of Western masterpieces have been replaced by art studios and galleries like this. Thousands of painters have come and gone as the village developed a new identity. The few that have stayed since the beginning shared their stories.
On Tang Xuefeng's canvas, you'll see stories of young dreamers searching for meaning in this fast-changing society. Their struggles very much mirror the painter's own experience.
I came to Dafen at a depressing time during the 2003 SARS epidemic. In 2005, international orders came flooding in. Paintings were shipped to Europe and the US by containers. I started off as a copy artist, but later turned into original works to express myself. I believe my unique interpretation of modern life would gain international recognition.
In 2019, one of Tang's paintings was shown at the Paris Louvre Museum. Many artists in Dafen attribute their growth to the redevelopment, which saw the building of Shenzhen's largest art museum, more affordable housing, and facilitated international exchanges. Today's Dafen attracts millions of tourists each year. The old alleyways that once cranked out copies of the Dutch artist Van Gogh are selling a new idea. For $10, anyone can be an artist.
This area needs to be highlighted.
Did you used to paint Van Gogh in a factory?
Yes, not much. Van Gogh was difficult to imitate. You did a good job.
Is there a lot of interest in these DIY experiences?
Yes, this place is packed during weekends and holidays. The DIY experience brings extra money to support my family. But my main source of income is selling paintings. Now that the economy is slowly recovering from the pandemic, I hope my business will improve too.
China is the world's second largest art market, attracting a fifth of global transactions. The country's wealthiest have been driving high-end sales of customized paintings for over a decade.
When the economy thrives, people collect. One of my pieces was sold for $30,000. Clients would commission a painting to remember a place, their hometown, or someone they loved. We are always innovating with new themes, compositions, and colors. We need a continuous funding from various art organizations to promote our work, because I believe Dafen artists are actually very creative.
Well, in many ways, the changes in Dafen mirror the broader Chinese economy. The dip in international demand since 2008 has led many companies to change tactics. China wants to be less dependent on exports and to become more self-sufficient. Industries continue to move away from low-skilled labor to smart, digitized solutions. And I spoke to a company that's leading efforts to modernize art production and translating old classics to a new generation.
170 years since Vincent van Gogh's birth, his Starry Night still shines bright in digital reimaginations. These animations are the latest lobby art occupying hotels and event spaces. Meanwhile, Chinese millennials are filling their homes with 3D artwork.
The market for decorative paintings is growing, but so is the cost of labor. Our solution is smart production. We work with artists by scanning their paintings on our 3D printers and reproduce using the same pigments.
Now, this is an example of an oil painting being reproduced through 3D printing. It looks and feels just like the original hand-printed piece, with similar texture and coloring. The difference is, of course, it's a lot more affordable than the original 100,000 yuan price tag.
Zhou Feng's company sells $7 million worth of paintings each month through e-commerce sites, but he sees potential in a different kind of online marketplace.
In the future, we want to turn this painting into a metaverse experience. You can drink tea, ride the boat, and hang out with friends. But we want to explore the concept of NFT as well. You'll need certain tickets to unlock new interactions. It's like a game.
An NFT, or non-fungible token, is a one-of-a-kind digital asset. Regulations are still being developed in China, but industry observers say virtual curated spaces can help new artists reach a much bigger audience while creating a new form of investment.
Many artists struggle to make ends meet before they become famous. NFTs will allow many young artists to showcase their work beyond offline exhibitions or auctions. And as an investment, NFTs are promising, especially if people can trade in a professional, state-backed marketplace.
Well, technology has really changed the way art is being created and shared around the world. And I'm joined by Ms. Feng Jianmei, founder of the TNT Contemporary Art Space. Hello, Jianmei. So how have you seen traditional artists innovate in the age of digital technology?
Nowadays, more and more artists are making good use of the digital technology and social media to deliver their artworks and art concepts to all around the world. Like the exhibition we have here now in TNT, one is created by the artist in their own hand. Another one is created by AI. So it's a very good compare how the artist can make good use of the digital technology to create more artworks and deliver to all around the world.
Fantastic. It's a direct comparison, visual comparison with the AI generated piece and the handmade piece just next to each other.
Yeah.
Interesting. And that seems to be something that maybe young people may be really interested in. You know, Dafen supports a 4.2 billion yuan annual industry of art, and increasingly that's driven by young Chinese consumers. What are they looking for?
Nowadays, the young consumers, they are more and more well-educated, and they think more independently. So they are looking for those artwork with more characteristic and can personalize their own lifestyle. So those artworks are with more deep concepts and more deep, creative artworks can attract their interest.
So the audience is growing and the artists are also growing as well. Shenzhen has obviously done a lot over the past decade to transform the industry from reproduction to creativity. But how do we help original artists succeed, not just in China, but on a global stage?
We need to hold more high quality international cultural exhibitions, and also we need to consist more favorable environments for the artists to create, like the international artist residency we have done in the last 5 years. And so we have invited 40 countries and areas, the artists to come to China, and we sent 20 artists to abroad, so that we help them to create their own IP and connect them more closely with the commerce.
Fantastic, and I hope we see more of that coming up this year as well, with travels opening up, and this is a fantastic space for you to do that, to cultivate this international scene right here in Dafen.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jianmei.
Welcome.
So, art really is often a depiction of social reality, as you've seen there. The changing phase of Dafen Village and Shenzhen reflects a decades-long evolution in the Chinese economy, from imitation to creativity, from low-end labor to high-value tech-driven innovations. The future is led by those who with bold ideas and the perseverance to overcome challenges. From Shenzhen, this is BizFocus.
Fantastic stories. That's this edition of BizFocus from our colleague Huang Fei in Shenzhen. Now, this piece is also about art. Nigerian teenagers from conflict-affected areas are learning new ways to express themselves through art. That thanks to the Art for Peace project, Sujitian's Clenchi and McCollum tell us how young people there are benefiting from this initiative.
Mohammed Abubakar is excited about his newly found skill in tie and dye art. Displaced by the insurgency in Nigeria's northeast, he's been living in a camp for internally displaced persons. Mohammed was struck with the trauma from his past and had little hope for his future. Now, Art for Peace is giving many like Mohammed a platform to express their creativity. Now he's looking to mentor others like himself.
Actually, I'm really happy because I never tried this before. It's helped me a lot. At least if I'm being perfect, I will try to teach someone under me so that they can also help their parents, maybe some small children, and some adult if they are interested.
Chidimma Orunwa is leading the Narratives of Art for Peace initiative. She believes that conflict-affected children are deprived of self-expression.
It's more like working with children from war-affected area and children from community, bringing them together to teach them different skills, using art as a means of expression for them.
20 children from the IDP camps and a slum community in Abuja, Nigeria's capital, are the latest beneficiaries of the Art for Peace training. They have learned skills in functional and aesthetic arts like painting, tie and dye, crafts, ceramics, and digital arts. With a continuous mentorship program from Art for Peace, young trainees here believe they can positively impact their community through arts. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
With that, we wrap up this edition of Global Business on CGTN.